Hey everyone, it's Michael. Before we get started, wanted to let you know about the Union GK app. The Union GK believes that all goalkeepers, parents, and coaches should have access to personal mentoring, college recruiting, and training, which can be thousands of dollars annually. The Union breaks the barrier to entry to these offerings with a cost-effective subscription. So regardless of your location, your subscription allows you to connect with world-class professionals throughout the goalkeeping industry in a safe, intimate setting and receive unbiased feedback and guidance. For more info, go to theuniongk.com or download the app at the Union GK community on Apple or Google Play stores. Thanks for making the Union possible, and on with the show. Welcome to Inside the 18. I'm Michael Magid, live from Hollywood, California. With me, I usually say 99 World Cup winner, Saskia Weber, but that would be an understatement. But because today we have two 99ers on the show, we've got Tracy Noonan and Saskia Weber, both goalkeepers on that 99 World Cup winning team. Tracy, what's up?
Hey. Coming live from Chapel Hill. Coming through.
What's going on, sister?
Hey, it's good to see you. We got to get Brian here and have us all, like, the whole game.
And then we don't even need Mike. We could just all get on here.
Yeah, you guys could just do your own show called 99 GK Union. That's what you guys could do together. And by the way, first off, Trace, we're going to be sharing some content later on when we're going to be talking about the topic. And I'm not going to lie, I haven't seen some of this footage in years. So the fact that you have this is absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible.
The footage I feel you like, gave you?
Yeah, the footage you gave me.
It brought back some memories for me too. It's been a long time since I've looked at that stuff.
So for people out there who aren't familiar kind of with Dynasty Goalkeeping, why don't you kind of just fill them in a little bit on what you do over there in the summer?
Sure. So we're actually heading into our 19th summer. So I'm super excited about that. So we've been around for quite some time. The biggest difference is we're a summer soccer camp. We run 5 weeks, 2 in June, 3 in July. I'd say the biggest thing that's different and separates us from the other camps that are on the market are that we're small and that it's female only. So we max out at 12 students a week. And then we've got 4 staff coaches, like 3 coaches plus myself. So our ratio of 3-1 is, I would say, probably pretty untouched out there. And so it's a lot of individual feedback. We do video, we do in the weight room, we do pool recovery, we've got daily lectures, but it's really individualized and the group really bonds well. So I think those are some of the things that make us unique.
How many days is it?
It's 5 days.
See, and that's unique too, because a lot of camps, goalkeeper just run a weekend. They run 2-3 days max and everything like that. And so to get 5 days in, like, that's old school.
It is old school. Yeah, very much so. And like, and then still housing.
That's when your parents ship you off and they go on vacation. Like,
you know, Saskia, you're not kidding. Like, since COVID, I've got a lot of students that like really haven't been away from home. And like, I love that environment of going away from home. And these kids haven't had that. And a lot of ID camps or even just the regular college camps don't house kids anymore. So they don't have that experience of getting away from mom and dad anymore.
Yeah, even when we would, even before COVID, like at UCLA, when we'd have, you know, summer camps, it still wasn't 5 days, you know, and even the overnight camps weren't 5 days. So just to have that much training, and so just only 12, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's super fun. I mean, as a staff, we absolutely love it because we really get to know the kids and we get to see what makes them tick. And for them, you know, they start to get a feel of like, what's it going to be like when I go to college? Because these kids, the majority of them do aspire to play in college and beyond. And so what's preseason's going to be? What is it going to be like? What is it going to feel like when your legs start to feel heavy? You know, we're going to go through a little bit of that and then work them through that and work them back in.
I went to UNC soccer camp.
Oh, you did? I didn't even know that.
Yeah. If you ever get the chance, ask Wendy Palladino about it.
Oh, that's awesome. I mean, I worked it as a staff coach, but I never went.
I've worked it too, but we went, me, Linda Kurtica.
Yeah.
We were all at UNC camp, and let's just say we got the feel for college. We got in some trouble at UNC, and like Dino and Wendy and them took us out to there's this great story about Gimgul Castle. I think that's what it's called.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, ask her about it one day.
Oh, they hilarious.
Took us and scared the hell out of us.
Very, very, very different days in the camp world compared to like when you're growing up. I mean, I was a Soccer Plus kid, so I grew up in that environment every summer.
Yeah. Yeah. Coach Soccer Plus.
Saskia's still pretty sure that she was hammering balls at me years back. And she's like, who's this kid?
I've met people that like are adults in like the working world now. And he's like, remember when you were at Kenyon College in Ohio for Soccer Plus? And like, and I'm like, oh my God, I've emotionally like hurt these adults now. They haven't forgotten.
That's awesome.
No, Paul Rogers physically scarred me. Emotionally and physically. No, I'm totally kidding. But Tracy, I do want to talk.
So how many weeks did you go to camp, Mike? I didn't realize that you went through the Soccer Plus system as well.
Yeah, I went a couple of weeks. It was that one of that like those things. By the way, it was like, do you remember when Adidas had those awful shoes where like you had to make them yourself? When they're like, oh, why don't you put these shoes together?
Because like, no, that was after us.
I don't remember any of that.
I think it was just Copas when we were older than you, Mike. Okay. We were your counselors.
Well, anyway, I had my studs kept like falling off like at camp, like because the shoes, I just couldn't put them together. Anyway, this is becoming a very odd podcast. It's becoming like a Soccer Plus reminiscent. It is fun though, Tracy, talking about this though, because I think these are a lot of these experiences that a lot of young players don't get today. Like you're talking about the college ID camps. One thing I love about, you know, a program like yourself or Camp Shutout or One-on-One is that it's all about individual development. It's about developing goalkeeping community. It's not about getting a scholarship.
Correct. And I think, I mean, I you absolutely nailed it. I mean, that's one of the things that I stress to my students is right when they come in is this is an environment where I want you to test yourselves, to stretch yourself. It is a safe environment. You're not being judged here for a scholarship. You're not being judged as to whether you start or not and you make the team. This is a safe place to experiment. Go for that cross and see if you can make it. Come out and try and win that breakaway. And let's just see. Try and catch it instead of deflecting everything. Because that's where the growth happens. And then it's like this great, you know, bonding that happens with the girls that are there for the week where they're pushing each other and they're super competitive, don't get me wrong, but they're also super encouraging because they realize that kid that's next to them isn't fighting for the same spot as them. So it's just a really cool dynamic.
Yeah, and it's a big difference when you look at a college ID camp because the kids go in with that mentality that whether that's a school they want to go to, whether they're coaches from other schools coaching that they want to be at, and that stress factor to not make mistakes and everything, you're not growing from that in a sense, you know, and especially with goalkeepers, you don't have them very long. They get thrown into small-sided, so it's not really a developmental situation for a goalkeeper where, you know, your type of camp is, no, we're going to stretch you. Let's work on your range. Let's do this. It's okay if you make a mistake. We'll find the middle ground, you know, as opposed to college ID camps.
Yeah. I mean, there's benefits to both environments for sure.
I mean, look, I think the one thing that you, and I like the fact that you said there are benefits to both environments because you do, at some point you do have to put yourself in that cauldron where you are getting evaluated. And if you've never been in that environment before, it's going to be difficult. I will say this though, Tracy, you know, for any young parents out there listening out there, if you take your children to a college ID camp, don't stay at the college ID camp. I've seen the helicopter parenting where I see the parents.
I swear they sit in the stands.
And it's like, it's like you're not going to be able through osmosis convince the school to take your child to attend the university.
So agree.
But I think both is good. And I think that, you know, I think what you see at a lot of college ID camps is kids that aren't at that level yet, but their parents think they are, or they put them there when they would benefit more from, you know, like a dynasty camp or, you know, or a Camp Shutout or something where they have to develop their craft to be ready for a college ID camp. Now, granted, some college ID camps, I don't know why they have the title college ID camp because it's like, it's crazy. But think about it, parents, before you go and say, I'm going to send my kid to UNC's college ID or to UCLA's or something. Are they ready for that? Are they at that level? You're just doing them a disservice.
Correct. That's absolutely. You've nailed it. One, about developing your craft. And two, you're doing them a disservice. yes, it's important to get them into some ID camps because there's the nerves. They've got to get used to that environment. But trust me, you're going to get that in our environment. And when you're a seventh, eighth, even ninth grader, you are still developing. I don't think you want that to be their view of you. You want the view when you're a little bit further along. So, I absolutely agree with you, Saskia. It's a great point.
But that's such a good point right there, Tracy. And I think there's such an emphasis nowadays at the younger ages now of like, we need to make these decisions early. You're in fifth grade. Where do you want to go to school? You know, what do you want to study? And they're like, I don't know. I just want to this weekend go see that movie. Like that's like.
But I even think, honestly, Mike, committing before your junior year starts is too early, in my opinion. And I think we see a lot of players change their mind.
Yep.
And whether the schools get upset about that or whatever, I'm like, guys, these are kids. Like, so you're going out of your sophomore year not even into your junior year, committing to a university, life changes. Your body changes, like all sorts of changes happen. And I think it's too early. Like I think maybe after junior season, like junior spring, maybe.
I would love to see that. Yep.
But I just think it's way too early to ask a sophomore ending their sophomore year to make that commitment.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, the transfer portal is out of control.
For that reason.
Yeah,
kids aren't developed yet. Like their minds aren't developed. They see a big shiny thing and they're like, okay, I'm going to go 3,000 miles away and I'm going to play for this school. I'm 15, like 16, and you're making that decision. I think that's too much to ask on players.
Well, and they're afraid they're not going to get another offer potentially. Right. So they jump at the first offer and they don't allow things to play out. And so much changes in the recruiting picture in that next year. As far as, you know, does somebody get injured at the college you're interested in? Does somebody transfer in? And does that change the picture?
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
Things that can change when you commit that early. I mean, that's 2 years before you even get there, you know, potentially.
It's also on the universities too, Tracy, because I mean, I'll talk to high level universities, you know, and I think things are changing a little bit now because they are allowing kids to, you know, decommit and everything like that from a lot of their verbals, you know, now obviously a lot of things happen, you know, family dynamic can change, you know, relationships with players can change, all that sort of thing. But I remember I used to go to these showcases, ECNL showcases, and a coach would be like, yeah, we're looking at 29s right now. You know, it's like what?
So yeah, they have
why are
like
these players even
out.
Showcasing? Why are they even here? Like, you're like looking at 29s right now. You know,
she's not even allowed to have a phone yet.
It's crazy. It's insanity.
It is. It's crazy.
And it's from both directions. You're absolutely right.
It is. Yeah.
Messed up.
And I think a lot of parents also have to recognize out there that there's like, and I do want to get to the topic of crosses because I do think it's a fascinating topic, but I just also think that this is important for any young parents listening right now or young coaches even who are helping their players, you know, guide them through the process, is that like they see the outliers. They see these, you know, top drawer soccer, number one recruit committing at blah, blah, blah to UNC at blah, blah, blah. Or like so-and-so's already have trials with Gotham and Chelsea and Racing Louisville and stuff. And they go, oh, well, if they can do it, so can my daughter or son or whatever. And it's like, those are outliers. That's not most people. And like, if you're not already in that position, don't be pushing for that position. You know, I have certain feelings in regards to like, you know, youth players committing to professional contracts right now when there's not really a developmental pipeline, at least in the women's game. So that's another conversation, but for maybe another day. I don't know. Susk, any thoughts on that? You know, I mean,
I think that I agree with you about the pipeline. I think that, you know, you look like at Olivia Moultrie. Right. And we talked about that and obviously succeeding and stuff like that. But basically, you know, was what under Nike at what 14 or 15 was training with Rain at that age. And this is a kid like I get it. And she's succeeding. But the chances of that are like so slim. So don't parents put on the brakes, you know, and it actually really think about this. Like, what are the percentages? And unless you are that like 0.001% that right. it might happen to, you know, you, the college system's a great system, period, to go through as well, and produces amazing players, but they're getting younger and younger and younger. And I think that, you know, there's gotta be a ceiling there. There's gotta be a cutoff.
Yeah. The percentages, you're right, Saskia. You've nailed it with that. It's just like, what are the actual percentages of people that are really going to truly succeed into making it in the pro level, and the value.
And I keep saying this, you don't see it in goalkeeping.
Yeah, we haven't yet.
And parents for goalkeepers, listen, you don't see it in goalkeeping. Why? Because goalkeepers get better with age, with games, right. with playing, with right. going through the levels, with seeing everything. You don't see it that way. You have a field player. That field player gets played in for 5 minutes here, 15 Correct. Minutes there, 20 minutes there. You have a 16-year-old goalkeeper that's not going to get any time, nope. is just going through practice, not going to travel, not going to do anything, and is sitting in the middle of nowhere without their parents, not traveling, not doing anything. And that, in my opinion, it's not – that's why you don't see goalkeepers go at 16 years old.
Yeah.
But you don't see it on the men's side either.
No, you're right. You're right, because it is – it's a different animal without getting minutes. You know, but that's also the same – scenario that I talk to my students about when they're looking at their college choice. You know, right. where are you going to go to be able, if you truly want to develop and continue to play, whether it's collegiately or beyond or both, you know, where are you going to have the chance and the opportunity to play? Let's look at that like really closely and not get caught up in the like shiny, you know, name and the ego of, you know, the bigger schools. Because if you're going to be on the bench for 3 years, you know, prior, you're not developing.
No, and that's what's nope. said to me. By Anson. Yeah. I mean, honestly, coming in, Lori Walker was there. You're coming in, like all this stuff. I'm not going to play.
I wasn't supposed to play.
I wasn't going to play. He was flat out. He goes, even yeah. though I was in national team pool, I was all of that stuff. And he's just like, you know, we're fine with Lori and you're not going to play, but you're going to start at Rutgers and you're going to get shelled and you're getting right. so much experience. And that choice to go to Rutgers and have be a factor in every single game and have so many saves and everything like that is what propelled me onto the US team and kept me right. there was because right. of that experience. And so, you know, it goes back decades. Yeah. And that's just a fact with goalkeeping. Where are you going to develop it and get that time and playing time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, speaking of developing, you know, in regards to that, like, I think that like, that's a great segue into this topic right here. Because like, no, I think it really is because the thing is that like, one of the reasons that youth players can't move up to the professional ranks so quickly or, you know, or high level division one, you know, right off the gate as freshmen and stuff like that is crossing is flighted ball scenarios. Because it's just another level. And that's just something that takes experience and reps and reps and reps and reps. And, you know, I think this is a really interesting topic, Tracy, because we're going to be talking about adapting crossing sessions, you know, for the youth game. I think one of the biggest problems, Tracy, is that people see like a crossing session by like, you know, San Diego Wave or Manchester City, you know, and they go, oh, great. I've got a U11 team. I'm going to do this session with them.
So true.
Why don't we talk about like how, so what do we mean by adapting the session to make it like realistic for the demands of the actual players that you're dealing with?
I mean, you've got to just start from the ground up. You can't look at the finished product and try and go from there. You've got to start
like this.
What I should have sent you is what I looked like in high school because it was a lot different. This is my fourth year at Carolina. I redshirted my freshman year, so this was my fourth season. So yeah, it took some time to get there. It's getting into the fundamentals. Nice. That part is mixed.
We're like watching them. We're just sitting here.
No. I'm just playing it as B-roll in the background because pretty awesome. I'm not gonna lie.
Go ahead. You can't go from 0 to 100, and there has to be a progression. And what you're also seeing is okay. So you have a 10-year-old or whatever, like even younger, and let's the realities of the game they're playing in as well. Like, can their field player 10-year-olds spank across? Not usually.
They can't right? from the flank.
Right? They can't serve the ball.
For crosses is very different because it's not even making it in.
Right, it usually ends up being a bouncing ball that you have to come out and get, or if it does flight in, it's probably a mistake. But you know, that's the reality of it. So you can't, like, there has to be like a progression into developing a young keeper.
Correct. I mean, for me, even it's, I mean, I start with hand toss, you know, and I'm sure most coaches do at that level. Like, that's where it needs to be. I mean, you've got to imprint the footwork patterning. You've got to get them comfortable with the takeoff of one foot and then jumping. I mean, it's a coordination factor when you're, you know, 8, 9, and 10. Then once they get their athletic.
Oh, Charmaine Hooper. Sorry.
Yeah. you know, but even with my older goalkeepers, there's still this like warm-up phase activation where I will still include a bit of a hand toss to imprint the J hook, the footwork pattern, the crossovers, and all of that sort of stuff. Because it's missed. I think oftentimes, even at the club level, we get functional right away because of the confines and the constraints of training. And so they're not getting that footwork stuff. And so what I'm seeing is a lot of two-footed takeoffs, goalkeepers arriving to the spot early, and they're not being held accountable. And to me, that's a disservice to our goalkeepers, and they're going to suffer when they get to college. I think you can get away with that at the youth level because the heading and physicality isn't there. And then, whew, that jump into college and you're going to be into trouble. If you don't have those little bits layered in. One last thing, like, I know in college, my goalkeeper coach would show up every day and say, what do you guys want to work on? Crosses. What do you guys want to work on? Crosses. What do you guys want to work on? Crosses. Bill, you can ask me every single day. And my answer is always going to be crosses because you get a ton of shots, but you need reps. Yeah. And that's how I got to becoming more dominant with crosses, is because I prioritized it in my game.
And I'll tell you, like, at the end of every session when I was at New York, was crosses. We finished. Yeah. There was some, we always, like, team could be cooling down, whatever, but the keepers were out and we were doing crosses. And it was, and it's so important what you said about getting that footwork and getting that timing. Mm-hmm. And how many young kids do we see take those two steps forward and then the ball's going over their head or they're right under where the ball's landing and they're misjudging it. And so there's a pattern involved in taking crosses and, right, and understanding how to attack them, how to go through the ball and everything, how to not come under the ball too early and go straight up, and how to read the service.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I want to bring this up, as, you know, and obviously, by the way, Tracy, I love the fact that, like, the majority of these clips are you flipping over another player in the air.
There's a mindset there.
I mean, my back is in pain just watching these. I can't even imagine.
Well, and then you wonder why I'm so banged up. I don't think you watch this, you understand why I've had so many surgeries.
Oh my gosh. But but I do want to bring up that, you know, one of the things that a child sports psychologist said to me is that they said, when it comes to crossing, when it comes to soccer crossing, and they were talking more in regards to heading for field players, they weren't talking about goalkeeping, but I think it does pertain to goalkeepers as well too.
The kids aren't allowed to head until a certain age either. And goalkeepers aren't allowed to punt. But I'm just saying, right? Like,
no, it's true. It's true. But they were saying that it's more the mental aspect of flighted balls really than it is the physical action of flighted balls, because the pace of the ball, if we're talking about when flighted ball starts happening, 12, 13, they're not really coming in that hard. They're not really driven. They're kind of more floated around. And it's more just the mental aspect of, like, oh my gosh, I have to catch this ball, or oh my gosh, I have to punch this ball, blah, 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 blah. And then they panic in the head. Do you believe that it's better to teach to make goalkeepers confident, and as long as the intent was there to make the right action, that's great. That's all that matters at that age.
I don't know if it's all that matters. I do think it's an important part of it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is that they've got to have the mindset. I think, you know, when I was thinking about this podcast prior to it, for me, I think the number one priority is footwork. Is that has to be correct right off. So I'm going to prioritize footwork number one in my sessions, but mentality is a very close second. So, you know, cause you can have a great mentality, but if you don't have, you know, like, you're an attack killer, you're not afraid to get hit, you're not afraid to get out there and take risks. But if your footwork's not there, you're going to struggle. But, you know, if the footwork is there and it's really, really good and you've got that ingrained, you know, then I think that plus the mentality, those two together are really, really important, because you do have to have the mindset to get out there and to take physical risks and not being afraid to make mistakes.
You know, it's interesting because, like, when you're talking about not being willing to take risks and stuff like that, Saskia, I think the fact that so many kids are scared of making the wrong decision rather than just learning that they're going to make mistakes in order to be able to expand their range. And so the next thing you know, you have goalkeepers that are willing to go a yard, 2 yards, and then that's it. And then everything else is a default for them.
Well, I think you even see this at the higher levels, and so you see that hesitation in the decision-making, and then they don't come. And then we'll sit there as analysts and go, really should have come for that ball. Like, there's no reason that ball should be dropping like a yard inside the six. Like, you know, like, but that decision-making comes from repetition, seeing it in all different situations. And then it becomes second nature and you're reading the ball and that confidence, but it takes a while to get there. And like I said, getting that forward step out of a kid's MO, like that's a big one. You see a lot of kids do that. Like right when the ball's hit, this is what they do. Also, you know, when it comes to a corner or something like that, like how many kids do you see that they're more worried about the person that's posted up on them and they push off of them or they do stuff that like takes their split second that they could have judged the ball out of the game. They took it doing something else that they shouldn't have done. I hate when goalkeepers push a player off them. I'm like, just leave it alone. Like, you know, that split second you did to do that, or the runs coming through. There's so much that goes into it that it takes developing from the ground up, like Tracy said.
Yeah, you need to have it in training. But I talk to these kids. I talk to my kids at camp and I'm like, okay, so the question is, you know, at camp when we're going through it and they're struggling and they're taking the forward steps of death and they're missing it and they're mistiming it, you know, the common errors that we see. How often are you taking crosses is the question. Mm-hmm. Once a month. Like what? Like then your expectation is way out of alignment. Of course you're going to struggle. Your result is, you know, a part of or is a result of what your practice is. So, you know.
Yeah, it's not just going to happen.
No, exactly. I'm not going to be able to go out there and like hit aces like Venus Williams. Like, I don't practice it. So if you want to do good at crosses, you've got to practice it. And it's got to be realistic. You've got to add pressure. And so the students have got to speak up and either spend the time after training, which I did, you know, or request it of your coaches, and which is what I also did, you know. So it's, you know, and yes, can your head coaches do a better job of incorporating it into the training session? Yes. But let's ask, you know, that, you know, don't be afraid to ask for what you need. And then if you're not getting it, then you need to step outside that and create it.
I also think we've talked about this, Mike, is that there's also a certain reality into the crosses as well. And what age are you working with? Like I can stand out there. We could stand out there and there could be like this little kid in the goal. And what am I banging in a ball from 30 yards out? Like that's not realistic. You know, if you can work this into your training for field player coach, grab little Timmy or little Jenny and stuff like that, that are supposed to be able, like trying to work on them striking a ball. And yes, we have to work on the footwork and we have to work on the fundamentals and everything like that. But at the same time, we have to work on the reality of what they see in the game. And we brought that up earlier. And then have them hit some balls in and see what the they can't serve the ball. Where is that ball typically landing? That changes the positioning of the goalkeeper and the expectations. If I'm banging the ball from outside, then your positioning is going to be totally different. And I'm probably going to be scoring every time because it's just not something that you're at the level to handle yet.
Correct. Saskia, I love what you just said right there, Trace, because I see this so many times. And I think a lot of times, a lot of youth coaches, the reason that they're doing the service and everything is because they want it to look clean and they don't want it to be messy.
Nice.
You know, and they don't want to be coughing on the field, all those sorts of things. But like the reality is that like now you're teaching players to time based on an adult striking a ball as opposed to like what they're actually seeing in the game. They go in the game and the ball's wobbling and everything like that. And they're like ahead of the play because they're so used to some 30-year-old smout, you know, hitting the ball at them and everything like that. So we're doing them a disservice. And the kids need to learn how to be able to serve a ball. So, like, if they can't hit across, like, you know, then you're, it's the same thing as like when they say, oh, you know, they got to be working on their goal kicks, got to be working on their goal kicks. And it's like, well, you know, best way to work on your goal kicks is for the kids to learn how to serve a ball. So just let them learn how to serve a ball.
Well, yeah, you know that, you know how I feel about that, because like I've had coaches come up to me, be like, you know, like so-and-so is having trouble with their goal kicks in practice. I'm like, your field players can't strike a ball. Like, so like none of your kids can strike a ball, but you're coming at me because my goalkeeper. So you want me to spend, how much are you working with your players striking balls? And the goalkeeper can be involved in that. Like, right. But you want me to take the 45 minutes that I have out to work on other stuff, to teach your kid how to strike a ball, which I'm fine with. I tell all my keepers, like, you know, you've got to get in like long balls and stuff like that off in your own time as well. Like this, you know, and we'll incorporate it at the end of practice and stuff. But it's, you're right, Mike, like at a certain age, it's like, these are fundamentals that all the players need to learn. Like not just, and then don't not let them do it in a game. Are you going to tell your outside, are you going to tell your winger, well, you know, you can't hit a ball, so hold the ball there. I'm going to let the girl that can kick the ball really hard run up from the back, run around you, do an overlap, and then let her serve the ball. Because are you going to tell them that? Because that's what you're telling the goalkeeper. You're right. Saying, okay, Jenny, you don't kick good goal kicks, so we're going to let Pam do it because she can boot it, you know?
So I want to go into these clips right here. So first off, Trace, set up kind of what we're seeing right here. Other than the fact that you all have much better situations from a field standpoint than we do here in Southern California.
St. Mary's School is a phenomenal facility. It's like a game quality pitch. So love where we are located in the summers. But I've put together clips. This one's actually a fairly old clip, but I've put together some clips from different years of our program. And I put together some of the common errors that we've already talked about. Arriving to the spot early is a big one. Taking those forward steps of death, you know, just going beeline for the ball instead of sighting it and getting into a bit of a J hook. And then I've got some other ones in here as it moves forward, hopefully.
And I'm gonna get ridiculed by this probably. Like I said, we see it at the highest level. Okay, take the U.S. Canada game. Take the last play of the game. Alyssa Nair, and she will be the first person to tell you, didn't come out for that ball properly.
She was late.
She was late coming for the ball. Her positioning was too deep.
Yep.
But when she came for the ball, commit to it. But she should have come through. She could have come through and boxed it.
Correct.
Right? Instead, she tried to come through and do a basket catch.
Yep.
And that ended up creating the foul. Had she come through and boxed it, she would have beaten Jill to the ball. Right. And there would have never been a PK. And look, that's just goalkeeping. And she could tell you, I know she'll tell you the same thing.
100%. Yeah. And I, you know, like what you're looking at here, this clip of one of my former students, EJ Proctor at Duke, you know, this is in the Final Four, you know, she's getting, you know, some of these other clips of them getting hit, you know, and, you know, even UNC, Emmy Allen, you know, a couple years ago getting hit by the UCLA, you know, yeah, she's getting hit. You know what? That's the reality of the game. You're going to get hit. What is your preparation ahead of it? You know, foul or no foul, you know, it's not always going to get called. So you can't arrive to that spot early and expect that you can go up off of 2 feet. You know, that's
and against everybody else. So she's
correct.
Too early.
Like that's here. You know, that's exactly
too
it.
Too early. Yep.
Yeah. Too early. And you're going up with the crowd. So yeah, sometimes you get lucky and this gets called as a foul and sometimes you don't. So let's, you know, arrive a little bit later and then come in up over and through that challenge with more momentum instead of trying to jump with that challenge. You know, these are common things that I'm seeing because at the youth level, these goalkeepers can get away with it. And their goalkeeper coaches are not holding them accountable for their footwork and the preparation. One of the things that I like to say to my students is track it, then attack it. Yep. You know, I'm really trying to get them to stall the preparation like you're talking about, Saskia, and almost even take these little pitter-patter steps in a slightly negative direction so that you don't get sucked forward and get yourself in trouble.
What did Tony used to say? Leave late, arrive early, follow through. Leave late, arrive early, follow through. Yep. And so there is a hesitation in dealing with a cross.
Yeah.
That and you have to judge it and then attack it and commit to that attack and go hard. Yes.
But I get so many of my students that just do what I call drift. You know, they get out there early, they stop, they kill their momentum, and then they go up off of 2 feet. And so that's one of the biggest things that I, you know, that I work on with them is that preparation.
And by the way, I just want to let a lot of people I know are watching this live right now on different platforms and everything like that. If you guys have comments or if you guys have anything that's been working for you when you've been working with your youth players, please put them in the comment section. You know, we're more than happy to bring that up. I want to bring this up, Tracy, you know, in regards to like, go ahead, Sus. Go ahead, Sus.
The other thing that we see, and I don't know if we were going to get to it, is that, and this is goes back to that mental side that you were talking about, Mike, is making a decision to mentally what you're going to do with the cross without seeing the situation. And these all happen in split seconds, but we see a lot of young kids that they're like, I'm going to box it. Okay. And we even see kids running with their fists like this already. Right. And so when the ball has, the dynamic of the ball has changed in the service, and all you have to do is open your hands and catch it. And we see that decision is made so early that they don't have the mental capacity to change the decision in the flow of the service. And you're like, just catch the ball, you know, or just box the ball, you know? And so you have to be able to build that mental strength to be able to make those decisions in the flight of the ball and with what's around you.
Right. So what you're saying, Mike, just so you kind of see it. So I've thrown in some clips in here for the coaching aspect of it. And we've got the individual stuff. All right, you're training one goalkeeper, starting super simple, you know, and then advancing it if you just have one. And now we're into a camp environment. So now trying to create some competitive environments with my kids to test their range and to get used to contact, you know, as well as a competitive environment.
But see, even the one before this, Mike, when she came, is this the same one?
I think it might be. I think I put this clip in a second.
So this is, I know Tracy's going to see it. So when you were watching Tracy's clips, one thing that Tracy did was follow through, right? So you're seeing the catch here. Watch her entire body pull it down and try to pull back. Like, so she kind of lands and pulls her momentum back, like away. You see that?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, follow through with the ball. Like Tracy,
she goes up 2 feet, and that's right. And that's, you know, and that's part of why her landing is awkward. And then the other girl in the blue, you know, it's on her side, but she's too passive.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so just looking at the footwork and their preparation. So these are, you know, youth developing goalkeepers. There's some things that I really love about what they're doing, and there's some things with their footwork that can, you know, improve.
I want to bring this up, Tracy, in regards to like adapting these sessions and everything like that, because I think a lot of times a lot of young goalkeeper coaches out there focus so much on the approach to flighted balls. They don't incorporate anything into the session that creates scenarios where the goalkeepers have to drop and retreat and drop for depth because they're not going to be able to win that ball.
Right.
And they're going to have to be able to react. And when we were looking at your clips right there, I mean, that is a very, especially on outswinging balls, that's a very common occurrence, is that a ball is going to be all of a sudden going to start veering away from you, and you're going to have to retreat and hold a position to be ready for that second ball.
Yep. Yeah, no, that has to be incorporated into the training. I mean, you haven't seen it in the clips yet, but, you know, it's going to come as we get more advanced for sure. There's some accountability in there. And I will say with this one particular drill, one huge safety thing for coaches, if you ever do this, is there is no diving permitted across in this environment. Yes, in a game, you might dive for a cross, but in that environment, it's a huge safety risk if the goalkeepers dive across. So, you know, those are things that you're not hearing. So if you're a coach that's creating that environment, those things are important to me. You know, so in these environments now, I've got, you know, a male staff coach that's challenging my girls. This is a college week, so this is obviously a higher level setup. You're not seeing this flank server over here can serve to either of the goalkeepers in either of these goals.
Is the other one on the near goal, is it a near post service?
Yeah, it's kind of like if this near goalkeeper here on the right can get driven into us, like you said, like a cutback. Like,
Okay.
Yeah. And then the field player's in there. And then if the goalkeeper makes the save and it's in her hands, she can distribute and it goes live. You're just not seeing the full, you know.
But see, I love that the progression of this is adding in pressure because you have to. Because like I said, that changes a young goalkeeper's mentality altogether. Like, it's one thing coaches out there and to go out and, all right, you got a keeper, I'm just going to serve balls and serve balls and serve balls, and there's no pressure. there's not even a dummy. And that's one thing to get some confidence and get some timing right. and get your footwork down. But when you add in a near post runner, is that taking your sight? Is that right. messing with your mind?
That's the first part, the first layer that has to come in.
Yeah. If you're standing a post player, somebody posting up in you and they pop off, is that taking off your focus?
I want to bring up this right here because, you know, Tracy, one of the trends that I've been seeing, and I think it's a great trend, you know, in goalkeeping, you know, today, is that a lot of goalkeeper coaches, especially at the college level and the professional level or youth academy level, are working with the teams and doing set pieces, like specifically designing sessions on set pieces, such as crosses, such as free kicks, that sort of a thing. How massive is that to the progression and the evolution of the goalkeeper that now there are goalkeeper coaches working with the team to develop these sessions that are going to not only benefit the field players, but benefit the goalkeepers in real game environments?
Oh, I think it's fantastic that that's finally trickling down to the youth level. I mean, it's only going to help them. Most of these kids, you know, were not getting that type of a feedback in practice from a goalkeeper coach. You know, they were having their goalkeeper sessions aside and not getting the training within the functional environment with their team. And so if a goalkeeper coach can get in there and make adjustments to the session and give feedback to the head coach as to what their goalkeepers need, and or just giving feedback to the goalkeepers as to where their starting position should be, their communication should be, you know, and all of that sort of stuff. You know, and what you're seeing in this environment here is just kind of simulating the chaos actually of corner kicks, you know. Yeah. Oftentimes when there's a shot happening and you've got defenders back on the line, but you know, with you. This is a drill that we used to do at Carolina all the time. And I'm sure, Saskia, you would have done it with the national team in your early days with Anson, called Team Trains the Keeper. It's a 3v2 in the box. So you've got defenders you have to organize. It's chaotic. It's on touch. You've got to work on stepping your players, dropping your players, knowing what you have to do. And then crosses, crosses coming from a more direct angle, which isn't trained nearly enough. And that's the cross that, or the through ball that hurt Alyssa the other day. You know, the free kick, the ball that gets dumped in over the top are so, so complicated. And I don't think people on the sidelines appreciate it. Our angle as a goalkeeper is very different. Our sight line.
And that ball with knowing you have to train this, running at you, seeing like your defenders, your everybody running at you.
Risky, and you have no margin of error. If you screw up that timing, it's in your goal. It's so different than the flank services. So it needs to be trained.
I'd love to team train the keeper.
That mindset.
It got so competitive, like defense against offense as well. It was crazy. And when like the person posted up is Michelle Akers taking that shot on you and everything, it was the best drill. And we did it at UCLA. I looked at Amanda one day. She's like, Sask, what do you want to do? I was like, let's do team trains. And Amanda was like, oh my God, yes.
It was my favorite. We used to do it the day before a game. It was like a light session for the field players the day before a game, and we got crushed as goalkeepers, but I loved it.
I loved it too.
So that goalkeeper that you just saw in the last training video, which was years ago, is this little girl here. Little, I call her little.
It's really quick. And so, Mike, imagine if you had six other crosses, services. So see where the point people are? Now add more people and national team players and Carolina players in there. And it's just like, and you just hear service, shot, service, shot, service. Shot. They play it to oh my God, you're dragging off the field, but it was so fun.
So fun. So this goalkeeper, you know, she was a student of mine from age 13 until her college career. Her name is Megan Kinneman. 5'4". Played at LSU as a 5'4" goalkeeper and ended up winning out the starting position over 6 foot goalkeeper because her technical ability was so strong and her mentality was so strong. So this is clips from her senior year at LSU. So obviously it was a progression. She didn't go in and start right away and beat that girl out of, you know. So she had her ups and downs as all kids do in college, but she really took it upon herself because she was a smaller goalkeeper that she had to get better and more dominant, you know, with her crosses.
And it's positioning and timing and footwork.
And knowing when to cross, when to catch and when to box, because she had to, at her height, box more frequently. And Mike, you made the point earlier about training, and this clip here is great, about having to call away and what your recovery footwork is, you know, and then training that. If you've called away, still tracking it, and then citing it to be able to come up with a really big time save here.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think one of the biggest issues I see, and I've talked about this, you know, at nauseum, you know, at the youth level, is there's a game called Keep Away, where it's literally keep away because the goalkeeper is indecisive. They're like, I'm coming for the ball. No, I'm not coming for the ball. It's like, and so you got to be more decisive on that decision early on, and that just only takes with reps and just experience of just seeing more and more of these scenarios over and over again.
That's what goes into me always saying, don't follow one mistake by the other. All right. So you said you were going to come, you decided not to come. Well, now you're just standing there like a deer in headlights. What's your next action?
Right.
All right. I didn't come. So now I have to go negative and I have to get myself in position for a second ball, a header, you know, a drop ball into the middle of that. What am I doing next? And you see so many kids say, oh, I didn't come. Or the worst of it all is saying, I should have come. Oh, now I'm going to go. So now you're so late that they knew the right decision was to come immediately, but you're so behind the play at this point, you're never getting to it. You're out of position and the ball's in the back of an open net.
Yeah, I want to talk about conditions because this is something that's come up recently here in Southern California. Tracy,
obviously not rain. In North Carolina.
No, but we've had this thing called rain. I don't know if you've heard about this.
Has been downpour. A monsoon season has hit.
Yeah, well, obviously they put the Gold Cup here for a reason, and it wasn't the reason they wanted.
The weather did not cooperate.
No.
Hopefully, it'll be better this weekend for the final.
Yeah, it's gorgeous out right now. It's okay, like good. 70. Yeah.
But I want to talk about this, you know, because when we talk about adapting sessions is we have to be realistic to the conditions that we're dealing with, we're playing in. So if you're going to be playing on a stormy, soggy field on a Saturday and you're training on an artificial dry surface, and then you're saying, these are the things I'm expecting from you on a Saturday, like that's not realistic. Like we have to be training for what we're going to be dealing with, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you're going to have, I mean, so I know Megan, because she would share with me what she was training with her goalkeeper coach at LSU is they worked on boxing more frequently, you know, in training. And yes, sometimes you could catch that ball in training, but she worked on clearing more balls because she knew she was going to be demanding it. You know, can you create that environment in training? Not likely. She's going into a pile of, you know, players, but she was training boxing. And I'll be honest, I didn't train boxing enough as a player. So when I got forced to box in a game, my decisions, I think, were good. I knew when to catch versus box, but my actual technique of boxing wasn't always as clean as it needed to be because I focused so much in training on catching. So yeah, you're spot on that those things have to be trained. And even if you are on a dry day, we've got to train boxing because you're going to be forced to have to do it more frequently on a rainy day.
I mean, I think, you know, that's absolutely true. And I think, you know, Saskia, I don't think enough people do train boxing because, like, especially at the younger ages, they'll say, you have to catch it, you have to catch it, you have to catch it, you have to catch it. When we train in absolutes, as you've always said, you know, we get goalkeepers that play in absolutes and they don't play in the gray area and they don't actually deal with being effective in the moment. They think, I am supposed to do this.
Correct. And there's so many different techniques to it. Like, what kind of a box are you doing? Like in the US game, the box should have been a two-handed forward box, even one-handed if she had to get the reach in there, but it had to be a certain type of box. There's one that you're continuing the ball on its path, right? Yeah, so it's coming across. Yeah. And so there are different types of techniques that are used. You have to train all of them. Yeah. And if you don't, you see the kids and they come and they slap the ball down. Right, the young kids, and they use an open hand and they go like this, and now the ball's dropping and bouncing and somebody's running onto it. So all of those techniques, it's not cut and dry. It's not black and white. It's not like, okay, go for a cross, catch a ball. It's not that simple.
Yeah, you know, I want to talk about this, you know, kind of as we start wrapping up and everything. And Tracy, thanks for taking the time.
That was like the fastest hour ever.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, when you
it really was. I
two knowledgeable people like this, you know. it goes quickly. I mean, honestly, and we just literally scratched the surface when we're regarding to this. I want to talk a little bit about like replicating match scenarios versus like foundational goalkeeping and just teaching foundation, because there's such a trend today in goalkeeping that everything has to be like the match. Everything has to be like the match. And then you've got a 9-year-old who's like slapping at the ball. And you're like, that's great. That's this match scenario. We made it effective. Ah, he'll figure out technique. She'll figure out technique later. Mm-mm. Why is that such a detriment to these young goalkeepers?
Oh, I love that you brought that up because love that you brought it up because they're not. A kid is not going to just like magically through osmosis learn footwork from, you know, the game, you know, just by training a functional environment. They're not going to figure out how to do a J hook. They're not going to figure out how to do the correct technique. It's going to be very painful. So yeah, at the 8, 9, 10, you know, it does need to be technical progression. It does need to be foundational. And yeah, can you then progress the session so it gets more functional as the session goes on? Yes. Based on, you know, what you're seeing, I would, of course, I'm going to end the session with something that's more functional with my students, whether it's a one-on-one session, a small group session, or in a team environment. You know, even if it's just like a 3v3 plus one with your team and the service, when it goes out of bounds, comes back in from across. Maybe you've got some, you know, a team of players that are not on. If you're doing a 3v3 plus one or a small sided game and the players that aren't on are flank servers. So they're getting work as field players on their service. Your goalkeeper's seeing a service that's applicable to their age bracket. But the session doesn't start with that. It ends with that. Mm-hmm. So it does need to be, I very much think you have to have that foundational technical stuff, Mike. And I do think that's a little bit being missed by a lot of these modern goalkeepers.
And I think you've even heard both of us say that, whether it be at the end of practice, at some point, like after practice, there's a place for getting that footwork down, getting that timing down, getting that rhythm down. And it's gotta be trained at all levels. It's gotta be continued. It's a repetition.
I think it still as a pro. I'm sure you did too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. That's what I was saying when I was at New York. Yeah. At the end of every practice, we would take crosses.
Yeah.
You know, under light pressure from the other goalkeepers and stuff like that. But it was just repetition.
Yeah. And then, make it functional with something like this as you get older, you know, and the kids are able to do that sort of stuff. But there's also safety issues when they're 8, 9, and 10. They're not heading. They're not, you know, we don't have any of those things. But we discussed some of those things, you know, already earlier.
Well, I think, you know, I think it's a simple matter of like, I look at it as like, and I used to be the opposite. And now I've changed a little bit because, you know, I've grown as a coach and everything like that, is that I used to be all about technique. And then I started recognizing, well, they don't understand starting position. They don't understand how to, when to come for, when to make a decision, all of that sort of stuff. So I started recognizing, okay, you have to teach technique because you need to have tools in your toolbox. And then once they know how to use the tools, like if you just handed somebody, you know, a wrench and they didn't know how to use a wrench, they'd be swinging around a wrench type of a thing. And they had no idea how to unhook the thing, is my impression of, as you can tell, I'm a very handy person because I don't know how to use a wrench properly, but you get what I'm saying.
You get what I'm saying. Not the best analogy, but we go
terrible. It's a terrible analogy.
It's like
exactly.
You can't expect the game to be the great teacher and, you know, them magically to be able to just like learn how to do these things technically.
And there's levels to this. Like, you know, I think that people, again, like you said, are too literal. I think when you look at a professional environment, a national team, that you're going to fall more into game scenario, because you already have all the technical and tactical tools in your toolbox. Right. You know, but when you're 9 and 10 years old, you don't. And you can't just put your goalkeepers in and do crosses and expect them to learn that technique and the footwork and when to do certain things and when to come from a game scenario. You can't at that age.
Even in high school and college, because these clips that you're seeing of my students, you know, are high school and college. They still can benefit from even if it's just an activation warm-up phase of it being more technical. And yes, I'm going to get functional way faster with them, and it needs to be, than my 8, 9, and 10-year-old. But there still is a an activation phase. That is,
yeah, you'll see that in most college warmups and stuff. I know for us at UCLA, when I was there, like, you know, we have our warmup, our activation with the goalkeepers, and that has crossing in it and everything like that, and shooting in it. And then we progress into, you know, runs in the box with the field players, with flank services, and then it goes into some stupid shooting drill that, you know, I usually pull my goalkeepers out of after they made a good save, because it's like that it's still the great layoff drill. So yeah, it's like, but that's even a progression to activate yourself, to get your timing correct, and then moving forward into game scenarios.
I mean, I think one of the things is, and I think it all kind of goes back to, is like, you need to, Tracy, you need to know what the needs of your goalkeepers are. Like, what do they need in order to be successful at the level that they are at right now? And I think I can give a better analogy. Okay, if you just handed somebody a book who's learning how to write and said, you know, write me an essay on this book. And it's like, well, I'm still learning how, I still, no one's ever taught me how to write before. Like, I'm not going to be able to do that. And they'll see, like, and I think all the biggest problem is, like, you go on YouTube and it's like, Liverpool first team training session, mic'd up. And it's like, and they see that and they go, oh, that's what I want.
That's what we're doing next.
That's what my session should, that's what my session should be. Do you see how they just go, Allison just goes into realism all of a sudden? Like, you know, it's like a couple, activation and then realism, like realistic training. It's like, yeah, but that is a 27-year-old, 28-year-old professional who's been doing it this for 23 years type of a thing. And your, you know, and your goalkeeper literally needs to learn how to handle the ball first, and then they'll have the tools to be able to handle that session. So yeah, you got to reverse engineer.
Yeah. And I mean, it's so true. And it's true for every facet of the position. It's not just crosses.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's not a one size fits all, you know, and there's different demands for a 6'5" goalkeeper.
Absolutely.
Or female, you know. Absolutely. Like, it is not a one size fits all. Like, you cannot, these techniques that you're seeing these top pros do, like you said, you know, like Manuel Neuer, and, you know, pick your pro. You know,
but you can even take Casey Murphy over, over Haricic. Like, yeah, you know, you can say, look at Casey Murphy's starting positions on services. Like, right, you know, she's almost six two. Eats up that space. You're going to take a 5'9" goalkeeper. That's not going to be their starting position. Right. She's going to come for balls that Casey can get easily. That might have to be a box for Haricic, or something like that. Totally different keeper, totally different scenarios.
So yeah, adapt your coaching to what your needs of your player are. That's the sign of a good coach.
I think that's a great way to start wrapping up this podcast right there. Like, that's such a wonderful bullet point right over there. So let's get into some plugs here, Tracy, about Dynasty. What's coming up with Dynasty in 2024?
Sweet, thanks. So we've got 5 weeks of camp coming up. We've got 2 weeks in early June. We've got different levels for those camps, but weeks in June are close to selling out. We've only got, I think, 4 spots left in June.
Nice.
One of our weeks, our younger week in July, is already sold out. So in total, I think we have 11 or 12 spots. That's it left for the summer. So if you're interested in joining us, definitely, you know, T Noonan.
Get on it now.
Yeah, at Dynasty Goalkeeping, Instagram at Dynasty Goalkeeping, you know, or actually, no, it's at Dynasty GK. I should know my own handle.
That's okay. Saskia still doesn't know her handle.
And that is the goalkeeping. Mike always has to tell me. It's up there.
Google us. You'll find it at Dynasty Goalkeeping on Google. We're there.
You know, as we finish up with that, you know, Tracy, I think a lot of people need to know also that Dynasty, it's not just about technical training. It's not just about tactical training, but you actually add, you know, the sports performance element into it, to the nutrition and lifestyle element into it, and the mental well-being.
Recovery. I love the pool work, the recovery, everything, all things that are important.
Yeah. The lecture piece is very unique because it is such a small group. It's not like, you know, I mean, we used to do lectures in Soccer Plus, but it was a bit of a lecture hall, you know. Mm-hmm. This is interactive, you know. It's like, you can't hide. The kids are, you know, required to do homework as they come in. You know, we do video analysis. We have one-on-one meetings. Because we're small, it is so, so intimate, which is, you know, the benefits of it. And it's a really fun environment. The kids stay friends, you know, beyond camp. And it becomes a really great support network, which is what the Goalkeeper Union is all about, bringing it full circle.
And you had Fallon.
Yeah. I'm so excited that you guys have her on there. It's Fallon came through a couple different times. It's so, so fun to see her progress and to see her excelling over in Europe.
Man, you.
You almost said no. You almost said the other.
I did. And... Fallon's gonna kill me. I'm gonna get a DM in a minute.
Yeah. No. She is such a gem. I love that. You know what I love about her? So many things like that I love about, you know, her play and all that. But what I love is that she has maintained her individuality, which is what you highlighted, which I loved on your last podcast. You know, you highlighted all the things that make Fallon outside of soccer. And it's so important to make us, you know, your identity is more than just being a soccer player. And these are the things that we talk about at camp and that what you guys preach as well, which I love. And that's what she is showing. And I love that about her.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's just like the massive thing right there is like for any parents out there listening right now is that like if your children, if you're just only putting time into their soccer career and not exposing them to other aspects of the world, you know, it's going to be very difficult for them when soccer is not a thing because it happens to us all at some point.
Yeah.
It's also going to be very difficult for them to engage with others who are going to have outside interests. Otherwise, you're going to have people that are very, narrow in like in their pool of people that they can engage with and everything like that. If all they can talk about is soccer, all they know is soccer. And, you know, we all have other interests, you know. Maybe there's some people who it's only about soccer for them.
No, we do.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Well, Trace, if people want to reach out, you obviously said it's over at Dynasty. If you want to reach out to Saskia, guys, it's at Saskia on the Union GK app. If you want to reach out to us for a guest suggestion or a topic suggestion at Goalkeeper Podcast on the Union app or contact at InsideThe18Media.com. Shout out all to all you guys who've been joining the app, who've been going through the mentor program, some amazing people. I know, Saskia, you've been meeting with some awesome parents and youth players and everything like that through the mentor program. If you don't know about it, just uniongk.com. Shout out. We're over 3,000 subscribers right now. So that's pretty awesome and very excited for everything that's going on moving forward. All right, guys, that's all the time on Inside the 18, and we are out. Later, guys. Yeah!